Don't do it. Jesus is coming soon. Thanks for joining us. Get a copy of this wonderful book, Arminian Theology, Myths and Realities. Your gift of $25 or more to Save America Ministries. Put the hardbound book in your hands. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Become a partner with us as day after day we're preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour, even today. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia 23255. Remember, the just shall live by faith. So you got to keep living in obedience by faith.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismier. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily those of IRN, its advertisers, or affiliates.
This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you of the views that are expressed here and not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for this hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesday, and we are going to invite your calls. I'm probably going to start out talking about what's going on in the financial markets, but maybe you want to talk about lots of other things. If you have a call that you'd like to make, if you have a subject you'd like to bring up, this is the time to do it. But if you've been listening to the mainstream media this week, they've suddenly found out that we have a problem, that we're in a recession. Of course, we've been in a recession for 6 months, but they just haven't caught on to what was going on. And there's been a lot of talk about what's been happening to our major financial houses. Certainly Citicorp, the largest bank in the United States, with assets of about $147 billion, has had to write off some $18 billion of their own money because of their faulty loans and the CDOs and the ABSs and the MBSs and all of these SIVs that they have, structured investment vehicles. All of these faulty loans really, of course, have very little value because people aren't going to pay on them. And so Citicorp has, of course, been having to not only borrow money from other sources, and they have borrowed money from Abu Dhabi, and they had to then give them preferred stock at between 9 and 10% interest. They're paying 9 to 10% interest to get money in. Ordinarily, of course, they'd be able to borrow from the Fed, you know, at very, very low rates, but the Fed can't loan them money, you know, to get them out of this mess. They can give them temporary money, but that's not the purpose of the Fed unless they're going to nationalize the bank. And now, after, you know, making massive purchases or massive sales of their stock, why they're going to have to actually get a great deal more. In fact, they're trying to get money from Kuwait and China. And the interesting thing is that today, why the Chinese said that they didn't want to buy any of the Citicorp stock, even though they've got massive reserves of American dollars. They don't trust Citicorp, and they don't want to invest in it. Merrill Lynch is in the same place. Bear Stearns is in the same place. J.P. Morgan Chase is in the same place. And we're seeing this with all of our major financial institutions. UBS, which is a Swiss bank with branches here, has massive write-offs, and they've already sold a considerable amount of their stock, 10%, and they're going to have to sell another 10% of their stock just to stay at least temporarily solvent. But, of course, will that take care of all the problems? And I really don't think it's going to. I think we've got real, very real problems with all of the financial institutions. But then, of course, we find our states, our state governments here in California. They're going to have to actually cut back $14 billion, 10%. They're going to have to start laying off the 6,000 people who work for the prisons. Incidentally, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to call. 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. They're talking about releasing 20,000 prisoners here in California and laying off 6,000 prison guards to try to save money. They're cutting back some $14 billion on the educational budget. They're going to have to begin closing state parks. And with that, of course, there are more and more people out of work. And, of course, then many of the pension funds are underfunded. And right down the line, we're beginning to see the tremendous influence of the fact that we just don't have the funds anymore. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And this is Open Line Wednesday, and we look forward to your giving us a call so that I don't have to talk all of the time here. But basically, the J.P. Morgan Chase Bank said Wednesday that its fourth quarter net increase dropped 34% as problems stemming from the housing market downturn widened in both the investment banking and consumer business. The company had taken a $1.3 billion charge related to bad subprime mortgage investments, smaller than many of the peers, and was dragged down by the weak trading results. It also set aside more than $2.3 billion to cover even higher losses from bad credit card mortgages and home equity loans. Still, J.P. Morgan muscled through one of the most turbulent credit markets in recent history, to post record revenue and profits in 2007, and yet, of course, right now, even though they made money last year, they're facing great problems. And they said that if the economy weakened from here, you should expect in all these businesses that credit losses will go up. And, of course, the big thing is that the recession is going to get worse. Recessions usually last about 11 months, but chances are that this recession will last a number of years. And, of course, with this, of course, it's going to drag down the entire economy of our nation. And really, that's what's happening. As more and more people lose their jobs, they just can't make payments on their credit cards. The credit card debt has been bundled into bonds and actually sold to various institutions. And so now, of course, those institutions are going to be holding credit card-based mortgages that are not performing. And, of course, they're going to have problems with those. The same thing is happening with automobile loans, and large automobile loans. And if people can't make payments on those, the financial institutions that hold the automobile loans are going to have problems. And they have just bundled all sorts of things into bonds and sold those bonds all throughout the world. And the problem is that these bonds are not going to be paid off. And, of course, as more and more people default on their credit cards, as more and more people default on their auto loans, as more and more people default on their home loans because the price of their homes is actually falling. And we're seeing this all across the nation. In fact, in San Diego, which has been one of the hottest markets, prices are down almost 15% here in the last year. And we'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's Open Line Wednesday, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. So give us a call. We'd like to hear what you would like to talk about. If you'd like to talk about what's happening financially, if you'd like to talk about what's happening as far as the war and the real story of the war, if you'd like to talk about Sybil Edmonds, that's a fascinating story that's been totally suppressed here in the United States, although it's circulating throughout the world. And But anyway, if you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. And why don't I tell you the story of Civil Edmonds, because I think it's probably the most important story of the last decade, and it is being totally blacked out by the controlled media here in the United States at the present time. Now, in the past, there's been some articles in the mainstream media about Civil Edmonds, and basically she is a woman, comes from somewhere in the Central Asia, her lineage, and she speaks fluent Arabic and Farsi, and she was hired by the FBI immediately after the September 11th attack to translate the wiretaps that the FBI had actually gotten in Arabic before the 9/11 attack. Well, now, of course, when Sybil was there, she did literally thousands of hours of transcripts, and she found some very interesting things. Number one, she found out that the FBI knew that the terrorists were going to attack. An Iranian diplomat had come and told them exactly what was going to happen, didn't tell them the World Trade Center, but certainly they knew that, because we know they knew it, because we have a publication put out by Bill Gertz of the Washington Times, who gets leaks all the time from intelligence, and of course Bill Gertz had posted on September 11th the story of Operation Bojinka, and the fact that the terrorists were planning on attacking the World Trade Center and the Sears Tower, and they had the Pentagon and the White House, and we still have that. Of course, Bill Gertz has forgotten he ever wrote it, but it was posted on the Northwest Airlines website on September 11th. So they knew exactly what was going to happen. They knew what the targets were. They knew that they were going to involve crashing planes into the buildings, and nothing was done to stop the attack. Well, let's go to Daniel, who's giving us a call from Oregon. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing?
Good evening, Dr. Stan.
Hi, Dad. Whereabouts in Oregon do you live? Oh, you're in Portland, huh?
Well, I live in a suburb of Portland called Hillsboro.
All right, fine. Well, do you have a question or comment?
Yes, I do. I work for state government here in Oregon for a number of years, and I know they've got off-balance assets that they don't tell the general public about. State Oregon seems to be running a huge budget surplus, and they refuse to spend the money in any kind of legitimate way. Like, for example, they're going to spend $150 billion. Let me repeat that, $150 billion to put a light rail system in between Milwaukee, Oregon, and Portland, but yet they say they don't have any money to fix the roads.
Well, of course, what they really want is to get you out of your cars onto the light rail. That's part of the Agenda 21 program.
Is that right?
Yeah. Well, this is a long-term planning, and if you haven't read the Agenda 21, that's in our Sustainable Development syllabus. We have a copy of the Agenda 21 is advanced here in Santa Cruz, and then, of course, the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report came out of the Second Earth Summit in 1992, lays it all out. Get people out of the cars and get them into trains.
It's just unbelievable. They're spending the money in the wrong places. But my question for you, sir, I've been listening to you for a number of years now, and I really appreciate your program and your insight. By the way, I'm listening to you on almost a 50-year-old shortwave receiver, or Hammerland HQ-180, which is a real rare machine.
Is it coming in pretty well?
Yes, it is. Coming through is fabulous. But anyway, my question, sir, is this. It seems as if some of the states that you live in, like California, I've been listening about Florida, some of these states have invested heavily through their pension funds in these SIVs, these structured investment vehicles that are virtually worthless, you know. What kind of time frame are we looking at before you think that the state governments are going to seriously unravel financially?
Well, I think that it's already beginning. Right? Certainly, California is behind $14 billion for the year 2008, and they've got to make $14 billion in cuts in a $140 billion budget. A lot of the other states are having to cut back 3%, 4%, or 5%. I think California is worse off than most of them, but all of the states are having problems. Why? Well, because first of all, the people are not buying as much as they have in the past, so they're getting less money in sales tax. Secondly, people are not making as much money, so they're getting back less money as far as the capital gains. And as far as the income tax, and then of course they're not making capital gains, so they're not getting it that way. I mean, California is going to have a $14 billion shortfall. They should have anticipated that. There were people who were trying to tell Schwarzenegger about it 6 months ago, and he wouldn't listen. And I don't think most of the politicians wanted to hear the bad news, but it's already started. That's in the state budget, and then, of course, are the pension funds. A lot of them are underfunded, and the people are going to have real problems, of course, when they go to retire, and there's no money for them.
You think, like, the PERS fund... I have money here in Oregon, the PERS fund, and of course, I'm just curious. Do you think that the PERS funds, whether it be Washington or Oregon or California, do you think it could come to a point where the PERS funds could actually cease payments to the people holding the pensions?
No, but I think that they could probably cut back on them. I really don't know what the status is here in California, or how those funds are. Some of them, of course, have acted very irresponsibly. And they've invested in hedge funds, and they're not supposed to take financial risk that they have. But I can't comment on any specific ones. I'm sure that somebody must be studying them, but I haven't. All I know is that a lot of the pension funds have invested not wisely, and a lot of the major corporations have not fully funded their pension funds. So that's where the real problem is.
Well, there seems to be a real dichotomy what's going on, Doctor. I live within a mile of the Intel Jones Farm campus here in Oregon, and they're just building new structures and inventing new ways to build things. And I mean, the economy is just booming here with the Intel situation. But I hear all the bad news and everything, and it's just it's just really. Disturbing to try and figure out and get a handle on it.
Well, I think that what you're seeing, there's a lot of construction going on all across America, because this was in the pipeline before it became obvious we were in a recession, and once they've started, it's pretty hard to cut back on that. But I'll tell you, there are an awful lot of people who are building houses that have all sorts of houses, and they can't sell them, and the new permits for new houses and new construction is really cut back. That's already underway will probably go ahead, and the question is, how are they going to pay for it? Do they have the money? Are they going to have to go out and borrow money? They may be in real trouble, and they may get halfway through and have to quit. We'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. Some areas, maybe your area is going to be prosperous. Certainly, there are certain parts of the country that are disaster areas.
Well, one of the things that's really scary, Doctor, is I heard you mention the state of California is going to lay off 6,000 prison employees.
Right.
As you're aware, this country has more people in prison now than any country in the history of the world.
Right.
And it's my understanding that here in Washington County, where I live in Oregon, they're going to start what's called houses, where they take prisoners and put them in 8 to 10 prisoners in homes, and they're going to be basically supervised by social service people who have no security training. And these people will be instructed, if the prisoner runs, they're to do absolutely nothing to restrain them. They're just to call 911. And so it seems as if the prisons have kind of gone out of fab and out of vogue, and now they're going to a cheaper way to incarcerate people. But it's like social unrest may be really just over the horizon, I'm leading to.
I think you're absolutely right. I think we're on the brink of chaos and crisis, and I think that whether it'll happen this year or next year, I don't know. But why do you think they have all those prison camps, detention camps, concentration camps being set up? I mean,
well,
they know what they're doing. Hey, I'm going to have to let you go because I got a full board here. All those
Dr.
lights
Stan,
are vacant.
It's been a pleasure, sir, and I will pray for your continual health and success.
God bless, and thanks so very much.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Well, let's go to Will, who's calling from Missouri. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
Well, very good, Dr. Stan. It's good to hear you on the air again. I've got a question in regards to a subject that I'm sure you're very knowledgeable on. Your extensive political background and knowledge is well known. But in regards to the established political party, let's just use GOP, county committee men and the county committee women process, where they represent ostensibly the local voting precinct, which, as I understand it, is the smallest political subdivision in our limited constitutional form of Republican representative government. That county committee man and county committee woman seems to me to be the key to accessing the beginning and the most basal level of our governmental structure. Can you address that?
Well, of course, it's different in every area. Certainly here where I live in California, we have a county committee of Republicans, and they're elected supposedly locally by the people, and there may be, 20 here in my county. There are 22 people on the central committee. And then they had representatives at the state level. Unfortunately, the liberals have put up $100,000 to get rid of me, and similar amounts in other counties, many of the other counties, and they put up a great deal of money, a fancy advertising campaign, ran a whole flock of liberals, called them conservatives, and basically it's very easy to take over the structure of the Republican Party or the Democratic Party here in California. I don't know this idea of having committee man, a committee woman in the individual counties, but I'm sure that the same techniques can be used. You've got enough money, enough advertising, you can convince somebody who's conservative, even if they're a frank communist. Hold on for a minute there.
Thank you.
So unfortunately, William, the people who've got the money, it's the old golden rule. He who has the gold rules, and that's really the way it is.
Well, when it comes down to such a tight area like a voting precinct, where a county committeeman and a county committee woman represents each party, it seems to me at least possible to be able to wage an effective precinct-based campaign to secure nomination election to that position with or without the party's blessing.
You're absolutely right. You can do it, but you're going to have to be very well organized. You're going to have a lot of help, and you're going to have a certain amount of money so you can do the advertising. And unfortunately, getting people to commit themselves. When we had the Republican Central Committee here, I'd have to go around and just plead with people to run for political office. Most people are just too busy to be involved. Oh, I just don't want to. I don't like politics. I don't have the time to put in one evening a month. Getting people involved, and of course, this is why I do what I do here. I'm trying to give people this sense of urgency. They've got to be involved, and I hope you can find enough people to help you if you wanted to start taking over the precincts there and make sure that the committee man and the committee woman represent American interests rather than the socialist or establishment interests.
Absolutely. That is definitely in my mind. One of the things that we have out here in the hinterlands is that a lot of these smaller counties are only broken up into a few precincts, and so gaining a majority position in the county party is not an unreasonable expectation. But I look forward to that, and I thank you for your information tonight, Dr. Stan. Always a good broadcast.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, let's go to Ray, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we had a full board there. Now we've got a couple of open lines. Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Well, hello again, Dr. Stan. I had a question. You were talking about gold last night, and I was curious. We had gold in Fort Knox at one time. What happened to that gold? I mean,
we don't know. I mean, they claim it's still there. We don't know whether they're telling the truth or not.
Yeah.
And, of course, the thing is that it could very well be that that gold was transferred to the Federal Reserve. There are massive quantities of gold kept at the first Federal Reserve Bank in New York City, and basically it's down in the sub-basement, and it's not only American gold there, but the British gold, the French gold, the Italian gold, and I mean it's in big piles, and if somebody sells, $10 billion,
right.
Pardon me, 10 billion ounces
in
of
China.
Gold, they just have a little forklift, and they go over and pick it up from one area and put it in another.
So it ends up in the hands of people who hoard gold. People like Warren Buffett, and I assume. I don't know. I think what it is they tried to destroy the currency so they could jack up the price of gold, and then the super rich will get super richer.
Yeah, well, that's the rich get richer and the poor get poorer.
Yeah.
I'm afraid they're going to wipe out the middle class. I think that's exactly what they're planning to do.
Oh, yeah. And it's unfortunate because you have some concerned people like Ron Paul out there. But he's being set up for criticism, people like Ron Paul and people that actually genuinely reflect America as far as the, you know, desires of the Americans, they're criticized heavily. But I don't
hold,
see...
Hold that thought for just a moment there, will you please? And we'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sidney Ray is talking about how the people who hold American values and run for office are demonized. And
they're demonized,
And ridiculed. And
marginalized.
Right. And then, of course, the people who are going along with the establishment or tied into the Council on Foreign Relations one way or another, people like Fred Thompson, CFR member,
yeah.
Rudy Giuliani, CFR member, Sidney, there are praised and lauded, and they're just the most wonderful thing. And even though Giuliani hasn't won anything yet, he finished in Michigan down below. He was, I think, fifth in voting. They're saying really how great his candidacy is, and he's just about to take off, you know, and just probably going to win the nomination. He hasn't won anything yet, but that's all right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what's true. If you say something ridiculous often enough and convincingly enough, everyone will believe.
Oh, yes, the big lie over again, you know, over and over again.
Right.
And, you know, but we're seeing some activity, and, well, of course, your show itself, you know, the fact that it exists, that's a sign of people actually thinking about what's going on in this society and really analyzing the things that are wrong. And I think that's where Ron Paul is. I think he's analyzed the problems pretty well. I don't agree with him on a flat tax or anything like that, but most everything
he doesn't support the flat tax.
He doesn't?
No.
Oh, that's good.
In fact, he was asked what he thought about the flat tax, and he said, well, I think if we put it in at zero, that would be about right. And that was to Jay Leno. I thought that was a beautiful beautiful response.
Well, that's good. I'm glad he said that, because I was concerned about that. I'm against it because I think it's regressive, and I think it basically what we need. Well, if we're going to keep the IRS, which I don't think they're going to get rid of it. I don't know. I think what they ought to do is have a progressive income tax of some kind. If they're going to have an income tax, it ought to be progressive instead of regressive.
Well, I think that we ought to do away with the income
tax.
Well,
and
what we need to do, the only way to do that, is to get back to the Constitution and do away with all these programs which are not constitutional. If we did away with all of the illegal, unconstitutional programs in the United States, we wouldn't need an income tax.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, up until 1913, we were ordinarily running a budget surplus, federal surplus, every year, simply on the basis of tariffs and custom taxes, things of that sort. So we do not, if we were doing what was right and what was legal, why, we wouldn't be in the mess we are today. But there are always those people who say, wouldn't it be wonderful if the government could just provide for the people just a little bit? And they sold the income tax promising it would never go over 3%, and it was just for the very rich.
Yeah.
Well, of course, anybody believes that. Probably believes we went to war because of the weapons of mass destruction.
Right.
They're in Iraq.
Yeah.
I mean, and the truth of the matter is, the income tax is a Marxist concept. If you read the Communist Manifesto, this is point two in the manifesto, a progressive income tax.
Right.
And that's the last thing we need, and unfortunately, that's pretty well what we got. Hey, we're out of time. Anything else you wanted to say before I let you go?
Oh, you know, I'd like to send those... I can make maybe some copies of the Malachi Martin tapes that my brother has.
Yeah, we can get those. I'd love to, or we can copy them and get them back to you.
Yeah, if I could send you them, I'd like to know where I could, you know, what address.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll have my producer get your telephone number. We'll call you after the program.
Okay.
We'll make arrangements, and we'll copy the tapes and get them back. How's that?
Okay.
I'm going to put you on hold here, and thanks so much, Ray. Good to hear from you. And again, our telephone number is, and I'm going to ask my producer to pick up Ray's telephone number. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let's go to Lauren, she's in Richfield, New York. Lauren, where is Richfield?
Lorene.
What?
It's Lorene, L-O-R-E-N-E.
Oh, okay, Lorene. Where is Litchfield?
It's near Utica, New York.
Okay, fine. So you're listening to us there on the big station in Utica.
Well, I'm out in the country, and I'm getting it out of Cherry Valley, WJIV.
Okay, fine.
101.9.
Right. Okay, fine. That's I think that's a translator or something from Utica. But anyway, I'm glad you're listening. And so what would you like to talk about?
Well, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you a question about Cardiolite.
All right, fine.
Is that that's your nutritional supplement,
no,
right?
Not really my nutritional supplement. We advertise that for the gentleman who makes it, and it's called, I believe, Cardivite. But anyway, the product supposedly is made up of herbs and supposedly helps hearts. And I will tell you, I've started taking it. I'll tell you down the line if it really works. You hang on there. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Lorene, I can't tell you that Cardivite works, that people who put it out claim it works, but I have started to take it, and I've had a decrease in my ejection fraction in my heart before I had the surgery, and after the surgery, too. I have a little leg edema, so I'm going to take it for a while, and we'll know down the line just how effective it is, at least on me.
I'd like to kind of put it in relationship to my mother and see what you think. She's 83 years old, and she had a mini stroke recently, and she has the aorta from her heart down into her left arm is 100% clogged with calcium, and her right carotid artery going up the neck to the brain is clogged. And I wanted to know, they want to do an angiogram,
right,
on her and possibly put a stent in her. And I wanted to know, I think I've heard testimonials saying that it could prevent that kind of surgery.
I don't think that if she is that bad that this would be the thing that you could do. The things that you probably should be doing for her, to try to cut back on the arteriosclerosis. First of all, if the doctors want to do an angiogram and put in a stent, preferably so she doesn't have another heart attack, another stroke, I mean, I would certainly consider that, especially if she has extensive arteriosclerosis of her carotid artery, and sometimes they can actually clean those out. But the thing is that once you get that cleaned out, then of course you want to think about the things that you can do. And of course a lot of the arteriosclerosis comes from calcium, and what you want to do is cut down on the calcium consumption, and you do that of course by avoiding milk, things like that, and using IP6 rice bran, and this is actually...
Well, see, I think she's been taking supplemental calcium all this time because her bones are bad.
The bones are not going to be helped by taking supplemental calcium, but of course that deposits in your arteries and gives you the arteriosclerosis. I mean, the way that you, of course, you can get the calcium to stay in the bones is to take a very, very mild estrogen-like substance, and there are certain things that you can take that will tend to push the calcium into the bones, and then exercise. But taking calcium supplements is not going to help her, but it will tend to contribute to the arteriosclerosis. And
so
what you want to do
is
cut out. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and our board is open. If you'd like to have a question or comment, this is Open Line Wednesday. And we have Lauren calling from Litchfield, New York, about her mother. She's 83, and she's had a stroke, and she has some arteriosclerosis of her coronary artery and of her left arm. And I'm simply pointing out that, she should not be taking supplementary calcium because that is not going to help her soft bones. What you do is you take some, and I'd suggest, do you have a computer?
Yes.
All right. You go up to knowledgeofhealth.com. That's knowledgeofhealth.com. That's Bill Sardi's website. And he has articles there on osteoporosis. And the thing is that you want to take something to give some estrogenic stimulation, and because that puts the calcium back into the bones. But do not take supplementary calcium, because that's going to end up back in our arteries again.
So no,
you really want to cut down on the calcium, and IP6 rice bran is a good way to do that. And that's also tend to cut back on the iron, because that is detrimental to our health. And then things like
iron
this
is?
What?
Iron is bad?
Iron is bad. Sure, this actually promotes cancer growth. And certainly for a younger woman, iron is important, because when she's menstruating, she's losing iron. But, you know, once she's, the age that she is, and once people are my age, they should not be taking iron supplements. That is foolish. In fact, when I had my surgery, I went ahead and they didn't even give me any transfusions. They let me bleed way down, and I probably had a hemoglobin of 9 or 10. But you manufacture that back again. And then, of course, quercetin and, there's several other things. If you want to drop me a note, I'll get them for you. That will help to cut down on the incidence of arteriosclerosis and progressive arteriosclerosis. But the biggest thing would be diet, exercise, and a proper diet, which would, mean primarily fruits and vegetables and fish and turkey and things like that, without a lot of fat or a lot of red meat. Certainly that cuts down on the iron she's going to take. And Russell Blaylock's got an excellent book called Health and Nutrition Secrets That Can Save Your Life, and another one on natural strategies for cancer patients. But the diet for people with arteriosclerosis is the same as the diet that you want to give people with cancer. Okay?
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
But do not be given a calcium supplement. That's the worst thing you can do when she's got calcium in her arteries.
Okay.
Okay? Thank you so much for calling. Okay.
All right, God bless you.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY if you have a question or comment, something you'd like to talk about. I'd started to tell you the story of Sybil Edmonds. And Sybil was hired by the Federal Bureau of Investigation shortly after the September 11th attack to translate Arabic FBI wiretaps. And, of course, she found that there was a woman working in her office who was translating a lot of transcripts from Turkey. And, of course, she was deleting important things that had to do with subversive activities and spying in the United States. And she was associated with a subversive organization, and she tried to recruit Sybil into this, and she actually threatened Sybil, her family, her children, if she did not go along with this. The woman demanded she be allowed to translate all the wiretaps from a Turkish agent who was a Turkish spy who was actually recruiting spies at every level of our government to smuggle nuclear secrets into Pakistan. Now, this story has been suppressed for many years. Actually, Sybil was blocked from coming forward and telling this story because the Justice Department put a gag order on her. And when Sybil appealed the gag order to the Federal District Court, the District Court upheld The Justice Department said if this information gets out, it will damage the national security of the United States. So then Sybil appealed this to the appeals court, and they upheld the district court. She appealed to the Supreme Court. They refused to hear her case. And, of course, she had some help from the ACLU. She then abided by the gag order because she was threatened with imprisonment. But what she found while she was working for the FBI was that there was a spy ring, certainly at several levels of our country. They were actually getting nuclear technology and nuclear secrets, and they were sending them to Pakistan, which is how Pakistan was able to get the nuclear bomb and, of course, sell the information to Iran and to Korea and to Libya. And this was being covered up by the State Department And, of course, we're being told that, of course, the purpose of the United States is to try to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons to other countries. I mean, we're going to a great length to try to keep the spread of nuclear weapons to Iran. But the truth of the matter is, why the State Department and the Justice Department, all controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations Globalists, is actually encouraging the spread of nuclear weapons, and I believe this is because they're preparing for the coming world war. And just as Sydney, the CFR globalists, of course they were CFR back in 1919, but they were actually financing the communists, and they've continued to finance the communists right up until the present time, even gave them the plans for the Manhattan Project during the Second World War. And then, of course, they financed Adolf Hitler, and they financed Vietnam during the Vietnam War, and they helped the Koreans during the Korean War, and they're financing Pakistan, that's financing the Taliban that are killing our boys in Afghanistan today. I believe, of course, they are arming Pakistan and other rogue nations in preparation for the coming war. It doesn't make sense. Why would anybody want a nuclear war? Why would anybody, why would any normal human being want to provoke a war? And I would like to suggest, because we're not dealing with normal human beings. We're dealing with people who are energized by dark spiritual forces, and you'll have to get my January 2008 newsletter to get the full story. But we have it all there. And believe me, it is an amazing story. The story of Sybil Edmonds and, of course, the spy ring that is still operating at the highest level of our government, smuggling nuclear secrets and nuclear technology from the United States to Pakistan and other countries. And we're arming our enemies. We are preparing the best enemies that American technology and money could buy. And this is all being covered up by the State Department, by the CFR globalists who dominate all levels of our government today. And when you understand that, why, of course, what's going on makes sense. If you're looking at it from a logical point of view, it doesn't, but we're not dealing with logic. We're dealing with people who have a different agenda because they march to a different drumbeat. They hear the sound of a different trumpet. They dream a different dream. Well, let's go to Ken, who's calling from Manitoba, Canada. And our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Ken, how are you doing tonight?
Real good. And how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Is it a little cold up there in Manitoba?
Oh, it's always cold.
All right.
It's colder, it's colder.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
All right, what did you like to talk about, Ken?
Well, I just heard you recently, you were just talking about iron supplements and of that sort.
Right.
And I was just wondering, I like a good gulp of molasses every day. I like to taste the molasses, so I like to take a good gulp of it every day. And I know there's a lot of iron in there, and I don't think I need the iron or anything.
I don't think you need the iron either.
No,
basically, you need the iron when you're growing, and you're up to, by the time you're about 18, iron supplements are fine, but you know, after you get your growth, you don't need iron, because iron actually, of course, will promote the growth of cancer and is not good as far as infections are concerned. So iron is something you don't need. Now, women, they do need iron supplements because during the reproductive years, once they get beyond that, they don't need iron either. And as you get older, the last thing you want is iron. And that's why you want to use something like IP6 rice bran, because that'll tend to chelate out the iron and the calcium and other items like that.
Oh, so I probably shouldn't be doing that.
You sure shouldn't. Now, I don't know anything about the substance of molasses, but if it's got a lot of iron in it, you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah. Okay, then. Maybe I won't do that no more.
Okay, fine. Well, anything else you'd like to talk about?
No, I just really enjoy your program. I got my shortwave radio about a year ago, and we listen to you regularly, and really enjoy your program.
All right, fine. Well, are we coming in pretty well?
Oh, excellent.
Because we're on Sydney on WHRI at night, and they have a 250,000-watt station there. I think it's in South Carolina, North Carolina, so I wish we could afford the 2 hours, but at least we got that 1 hour there.
Well, that's right, that's right.
God bless, and thanks very much for calling.
Yeah, God bless you, too. Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh,
okay, let's go ahead and go to Jack, who's calling from Michigan. Jack, did you have a question?
Well, Dr. Stan, I wanted to bring up, since we started off with the monetary system, and since it impacts everyone's life commercially every day, the last time you had the fellow from Arizona who does all the Masonic...
That's just Ralph Epperson.
Yes, Ralph brought up some interesting anomalies in the Constitution, and I went into Section Article 1, Section 8, and I don't know if you've ever read this or whether Pastor Whitney has ever expounded on this, but Article 1, Section 8 lays out the powers, responsibilities, whatever, of Congress. It says, okay, so you got Section 8, the first paragraph, and you have a little one. It says, to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Then you go down four more sections. It says, to coin money, regulate the value thereof. Now, if Congress has the power to coin money and regulate the value thereof, why do they need power to borrow money on the credit of the United States? Seems like a very serious anomaly.
I don't think so at all. I think that basically you do not want to coin excess money, and it might very well be that before the proceeds were coming in at any time, they'd be able to borrow money temporarily, and then they could pay it back again.
Oh, okay.
But
well,
the thing that, you know, it's just like you and I. Sometimes we get a little short on money, we'll go down and we'll borrow it, and then we'll pay it back just as quickly as we can, and that's why they're doing that. Now, of course, Ralph and I disagree as far as his attitude towards the Constitution, but I love him dearly like a brother.
Right. Well, let me bring something else up.
All right, fine.
Okay. Dr. Alan Keyes, right? You know who he is, right?
Yes,
Alan
I do.
Anyhow, in Bob Plimpton's book, You Were Born Free, Now You Can Live Free.
Right.
What Bob Plimpton has done in this book, in fact, on the very front cover it says here, there are none so enslaved as those who falsely believe they are free. Some guy by the name of Goethe, or Goethe, G-O-E-T-H-E. And it's subtitled, The 10 Modern Myths That Shackle Us.
I really don't want to go on a lot. Did you have something you wanted to specifically say? Because I know Bob Plimpton. I like Bob very much, but I disagree with him. He's going to tell us, you know, all about freedom while we're on the path to establishing a dictatorship. And as I've told Bob, you're going to be the best informed fellow in the concentration camp. But thanks very much for calling, Jack. And let's go to somebody. Is this the gentleman calling from Spokane?
Yes, sir.
All right, fine. What did you would like to talk about?
Well, this relates to your subject last week. Dr. Stan, I don't know if you recall the opening scenes from that 1970s TV show, The $6 Million Man, but what you see there is a pilot banking this way and then that way, and then eventually he crashes and burns. And what this tells me is how perilous it truly is to try to manually damp oscillations. And I would just simply ask, why do psychiatrists and psychologists always reach for the serotonin-modulating drugs when it comes to treating things like ADHD, and seasonal affective disorder, and things like that?
Well, I think that they shouldn't. I think that they don't understand that basically, of course, most of these people, you know, already have more serotonin than they need. And I don't really think, of course, what you do with the SSRI, that's the serum serotonin reabsorption inhibitors, is actually raise the serotonin level. And if you're hyperactive, why would they want to do that? In fact, usually they use Ritalin on those. And, of course, Ritalin actually stymies the growth. It prevents growth, gives you a smaller head. I mean, there's
exactly
no justification for that. I think the use of Ritalin is criminal, but it's being used extensively all across the country. They're simply poisoning our children. And the psychiatrists do it because everybody else says it's all right. And it isn't. And you need to get some of the writings of Dr. Peter Bregan, B-R-E-G-I-M. He used to be at Johns Hopkins. I think he's at Harvard now. But anyway, Peter Bregan has written extensively on the use of Ritalin. And, of course, Ann Blake Tracy has written extensively on the use of Prozac, and we shouldn't be using it.
Dr. Stan, I also recall Dr. John Leffler mentioned exercise was an important thing for normal serotonin metabolism.
I'm sure he's right.
I Googled that, and surprisingly, They say a walk in the woods is six times more effective than Prozac. And another thing that's really good is pharmaceutical-grade molecular distilled fish oil. I know it sounds crazy, but try it sometime. It actually works.
Well, I'm sure it does. And really, of course, when you exercise, you release the endorphins. And, of course, they have a tremendous effect on your body. And exercise is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And, of course, especially if you can go walking in the woods. I can't. I have to work out on a bicycle and exercise machines. But that is obviously the way to go. So you're lucky if you've got a place to go in the woods.
I think it has to do maybe with that 550 nanometer light. Well, I'll let you go. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
God bless, and thanks so much. And let's go to Fred calling from Philadelphia. Hi, Fred. How are you doing tonight?
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to bring this up. I know you seem to have a big expertise in history and philosophy, right?
Well, I wouldn't say I have a big expertise, but I'm sort of an amateur historian.
Okay. What about the role of social psychologists? I found a very interesting lineage between Immanuel Kant. He's a philosopher, but he has a talks about perceptions and propaganda. Carl Schmitt, who was his student, a distant student, Norbert Wiener, which has who was known as the father of information theory, and Brockway McMillan, who is the Cold War engineer. He's still alive, one of the first heads of the National Reconnaissance Organization.
Well, I think what these people wanted to do was to remake our society, and then they've succeeded. And of course, these humanistic ideas, you know, the man can re-engineer society, and this is what they've all been working for. And America has changed. We don't live in the America that I was born in, that I lived back in the 1950s and 60s. So we got real problems. Anything else you'd like to say, Fred?
And without knowing how this is happening, you're basically prone to believe anything that comes down the pike.
You're absolutely right, and the media is certainly not going to tell you. God bless. Thanks so very much. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let's go to Terry, who's calling from Spokane. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just great. How about you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you very much. I read a book years ago called How the Far East Was Lost.
Yes.
By Dr. Anthony Kubek. I picked it up in a secondhand store and I read it. And I was just appalled
at what I read, especially
our State Department and how we basically stabbed China in the back.
That's a beautiful book. In fact, I did an interview with Kubek in 1980, and we have it on film. One of these days I'd like to get it out. And you're absolutely right. It was the United States State Department that brought communism to China. Most people don't know that, but Kubek did a great job of getting that information out.
Oh, good. I'm glad that I thought you'd probably heard about him, but I never had. And so I got on the Internet tonight, and I see he wrote another book called Communism at Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And I guess some other things he wrote. So you would, if I wanted to read more of his stuff, you wouldn't. In your opinion, wouldn't be any reason why I shouldn't do that.
I think he was a dedicated patriot, and it was a great American. And unfortunately, so many of the people who wrote things of this sort never got any recognition. And it was really a privilege to get a chance to meet him and talk to him. And one of these days, we'll hope to get that interview made available for people all across America. People have to understand that. Our government brought communism to China. Our government, and I'm not talking about our government, I'm talking about the CFR globalists who control the government. Our government, you know, precipitated the Korean War and aided the North Koreans all during the Korean War. People don't understand in the same manner that we financed, the Russians were financing the North Vietnamese, they were financing the Viet Cong, who were killing our boys in the rice paddies of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. It's all phony. We fought a no-win war in Korea. We fought a no-win war in Vietnam. And we're fighting a no-win war in Afghanistan and in Iraq today.
Nothing has changed, has it?
No, there's nothing new under the sun. Anything else you'd like to say?
No, I just wanted to call you and ask you about this man. I really opened my eyes.
He's a good man, and I encourage other people to read it. God bless him. Thanks so very much.
Yeah, thank you, Stan.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Let's go to Mark calling from Florence. Hi, Mark. We got just a very about 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Hi, Dr. Stan. Dr. Stan, you know, when it comes to the current election primaries that are going on here, and you have Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich, who are closer together by far and have really nothing in common with the rest of the candidates as far as the true welfare.
Hold that thought for just a minute. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We have Mark calling from Florence, Oregon, and he was just saying that recently that Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich are very, very close together on many issues. Of course, they're not close together on the social issues or on economics, but certainly on the war and a concern about what the government's doing. So there are many similarities and some differences between them. But, I mean, certainly I've heard Ron Paul say that Kucinich is closer to him than anybody else in either party who's running for president.
Well, they're both right outside of the system. I mean, they're really antithetical to what the objectives of the New World Order, the Illuminati, are. And what we have here are two candidates and two different parties that are divided only by party for the most part as far as their viability as an actual team. They also have in common that they've both been cheated in the last two primaries in Iowa and now in New Hampshire, and not Iowa, but New Hampshire and Michigan. And Ron Paul, it looks like, has declined to really come out and fight this legally, and Dennis Kucinich actually is doing that. And I believe if Ron Paul would actually step out, and I think it's doing what's right, no matter what the political consequences may be, I think the political consequences would really shine in his favor. I think it would put him on the roadmap, put him into the consciousness of the American people, and it's really the right thing to do. It's the fundamental part of a working and vibrant democracy that we have fair and free elections. If we don't, it converts into a tyranny almost overnight.
Well, I think we've got a tyranny, but I think that I hope there's going to be a vote recount in New Hampshire. We should know in a day or two. They've been collecting money for it, and to Dennis Kucinich's credit, he certainly was the one who really pushed this. Hey, I've got to run. We're out of time.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Thanks very much, Mark, and
okay.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Yep.
And, of course, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there in the listening audience and you're in a position to help us, we'd love to hear from you. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, and if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters or get our newsletter on a regular basis, certainly, if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to read it. It will introduce you to so many of the things we talk about. And, of course, my talk on the forbidden secret will give you tremendous insight into what's going on. We have two new four-tape or four-CD sets. One of them is called The Bilderbergers. And then, of course, we have the new four-tape set on spy chips. We actually have a new book. It's called Bilderberger Diaries, written by Jim Tucker. We have another book on the Bilderbergers. We have two books on the Bilderbergers, the Bilderberger Diary and the Bilderbergers. And then, of course, we have Alex Jones' excellent DVD entitled Endgame. That's Endgame. And that gets into not only the Bilderbergers, but their program for population control and mass genocide. So remember our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And certainly we hope that you'll go to our website at radioliberty.com. Now, of course, you can hear us there on the website, on the Internet, and you can listen 9 hours a day and not get anything accomplished, or you can listen 3 or 4 hours a day through the live streaming that we put up to our satellite. And, of course, you can listen to Joyce Riley and Chuck Chrismeyer and Pastor Butch Paw on the satellite. And we do have a satellite feed. And, of course, if you can't get us any other way, why, get the Telstar 5 satellite. That really works out very well for the people who have it. And not only that, but you can hear Al Jazeera there, which I believe is probably a broadcast by our intelligence agencies. It's part of this whole facade of there really is this terrorist movement out there. They want to kill us, and well, that's why they haven't, of course, they want to kill us. That's why we haven't sealed the border. That's why there haven't been any attacks on America, any major attacks in almost 6 years. I mean, there are a lot of things about this war on terrorism that don't make sense, including the fact that we never have really tried to get to Osama bin Laden. If you go to the FBI website and look, you'll find that the FBI doesn't even know that Osama bin Laden was involved in the World Trade Center. Please pray for America, pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views I've expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this evening they're going to be the views of Bob and Ann Schultz, who work with the Worship Alliance Ministry, the co-founders of it, and we're going to see if we just get them on the line here right now. Hi, Bob, are you there?
I am. Is this Dr. Stan?
It is Dr. Stan. Is Ann there as well?
Yes, I'm here too, Dr. Stan.
All right, fine. We're sure glad to have you on the line. And, of course, Bob was saved at the Christian Renewal during the early 70s, and he got his master's degree in national security affairs with a focus on Israel. And for many, many years, he's been leading tours to Israel. And he's going to be leading a tour, is it in February?
That's correct, February 17th, 2008.
All right, fine. And, of course, that's my birthday, so you'll be leaving on my birthday. And how many people are going to be in your group you're taking?
There'll be approximately 16 people, one from Great Britain.
All right, fine. And, of course, they go over, and, of course, they get in touch with some of the missionaries over there, like Cheryl Hancock, who's a regular guest here at Radio Liberty whenever she's in the country. And they work with Watchmen International and with the Digit and Mount Carmel Assembly, and of course have a great time, go over and pray for Israel and see the wonderful, wonderful sites that are available over there. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you've never been to Israel, you've missed one of the great experiences of your life. We've been there about 6 times, my wife and myself. We haven't been able to get there for over a decade because of course the demands of the radio station, but certainly, it is an exciting, exciting trip. Are you looking forward to it, Bob?
Every time we go, it's a blessing, Dr. Stan, and we come back always changed and learn more things when we return.
All right. Well, Sydney, what is WAM?
And you want to handle that?
Sure. Worship Alliance Ministries, mm-hmm. We're a 501c3 religious nonprofit. And we have a fellowship called Har Adonai, which means up to the mountain of the Lord. And that's what we do. We go up to the mountain of the Lord in worship. We have Havdalah on Saturday nights at the end of our services. And we have a distinctly Hebraic flavor to our worship.
All right, fine. And so do you have any Messianic Jews with you, or primarily just a Gentile Christian?
Mostly Gentile believers, but we do have a wonderful black Messianic Jew who's part of our
fellowship with his family. We actually have three generations in our fellowship worshiping together.
Okay, fine. Now, why do you continue going over to Israel? I mean, you've been there many times. You've seen it all, I'm sure. So why do you continue taking the trips every year?
Well, our hearts are just hooked to Israel. When we began going to Israel in 1976, I had an instant heart connection before the plane ever landed. I looked at my husband and said, I'm home. And every time we go, we feel more that we belong there, that we're part of the land. And God speaks to us there as nowhere else in the world.
Well, it is. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience to really walk where Jesus walked and to see those places and walk down from certainly the Mount of Olives, to the Kidron Valley, up to the Sheep Gate there, into the Old City. And of course, the city's been destroyed probably a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. 26 times.
How many times?
26 times.
Destroyed 26 times, and yet, of course, it still has tremendous, tremendous appeal, and the walls and the gates and the people there, certainly from all different branches, whether they be Armenians or whether they be Arab, Palestinians, or whether they be the Jews who were there, or the Christians. It's an exciting place to go. And we're going to be back in just a moment with Bob and Ann Schultz talking about their coming trip to Israel.
Praise the Lord.
Well, of course, now, why are you interested in Israel and how did it happen?
Are we back on the land?
You're back on the air, right?
Okay. Well, we're interested in continuing to go to Israel because we have an identity with the Jewish people, with the land of Israel. When we were converted back in 1972, God put a heart in this for Israel and for learning all about our Hebraic roots. I went to Israel in 1976 with my wife, Anne, who was pregnant with our first child in 76, and I returned the following year. Well, she remained home, and I tour hosted a bunch of people with a colleague of mine. And then I came back, and I went to Navy School for my master's degree and studied as much as I can learn about Israel. And with that background, studying and getting my master's degree, we were propelled into meeting and supporting Israeli nationals who would come over to Navy School and help sponsor them and adjust to the American way of life. And we always had invitations from these Israelis to return to Israel, come to Israel, but for 30 years we couldn't get back there. And then 2005, the Lord just opened up the door and we made it there, just my wife and I, and made contact with all our friends that we have known in the ministries over there, including Cheryl Hancock and Ephraim Frank, and these two people that we sponsored, a colonel in the IDF, and his wife, and so they hosted us throughout all of Israel, my wife and I. We were treated like kings and queens. And we just knew right then and there that the Lord had called us to come back to Israel and to tour host people into the land so they may experience Israel full time. Not just a tour, but to go and pray in the land. So our heart's desire was to bring the church into Israel so they may experience the Bible alive. So when they read scriptures, that they would understand that they actually were real places, and then they would capture that and bring it back to their respective churches. So we have a heart for Jews. We love the Jewish people. We take our stand with the Jewish people, but not at the expense of the Palestinians or the Arab people over there. We love the people of Abraham, and Abraham, of course, had a few wives, and one was Keturah, and she had many sons besides Hagar, who had Ishmael. So God blessed his descendants, and they are related, but unfortunately, this hatred or division that's between them.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were talking to Bob about why they want to keep going back over there. And, of course, he points out that they have a tremendous love for the Jewish people, but also for the Arabs, because, of course, they're also descendants of Abraham, who had several wives, but one besides Hagar and Sarah. So it really is an exciting time. And, of course, many of the Jews over there, though, are quite secular. They really don't believe in the, you know, in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They certainly may pay lip service to it, but they really have an entirely different view. They're certainly the Orthodox Jews, they're the Hasidic Jews, but there are all sorts of Jews, but many of them really don't believe in the Jewish traditions, do they?
That's correct, and I'll let Ann feel that because we have our guide is a secular Jew.
We have a wonderful guide that we've worked with for 3 years now, and the first time we met him, he said, we asked him if he was a religious Jew or a secular Jew, and he says, I'm a secular Jew. And
what's his name?
His name is Ze'ev Friedman.
Okay.
And he's a wonderful man, but in the next breath, after telling us that he was a secular Jew, he also mentioned that he was a Cohen, which means that his family was descended from the priestly line. And he was very proud of that. So even in the secular Jews, there's still the seed of faith that's wanting to come to the surface. It's wanting to find something to believe in. And in the 3 years that we've worked with him in the land, we have developed a relationship with him that is very close, and we're like family. And I really believe that at some point he's going to find his Messiah. And we're very excited that we're going to see him again in a couple of weeks, and who knows what the Lord's going to do. For us, it's all about relationship. One of the things that we do when we go into the land that's kind of different from what a lot of tours do is that we build relationship. The people we bring meet people in the land. They don't just go and look at things. And they develop friendships with people who are living and working in the land, and all kinds of people. We have Palestinian Christian friends, we have Messianic Jewish friends, we have people who are secular Jewish friends, we have all kinds of people that they meet, Orthodox Jews, and develop relationship. And what happens is they come back with a very different perspective of what Israel's really like and what's going on over there, and their prayers change as a result of that. They become much more effective in their prayers for Israel.
Well, you know, it's really a very interesting thing that, you know, I've talked to a number of Jewish people who have told me they've had a supernatural experience and actually have had an apparition that they assumed was Jesus, and that was what brought them into a personal relationship with the Lord. And, you know, this is something strange. This is also happening, I've talked to Cheryl, and it's happening sometimes with the Palestinians.
Yep.
Things that we do not, you know, ordinarily think about here. We think that sounds pretty far out, but when you hear it enough times from Jewish people, and Cheryl has told me that the same thing is true with the Palestinians,
right,
you begin to realize that there is a supernatural force that is bringing many Jews to become Christians.
That's right.
Have you heard that story?
Yes, we have, and we know this is true, and it's happening more and more. It's a very exciting time because it's an indicator that we're coming into the Messianic Age as the Jews are beginning to see their Messiah and the scales are coming off their eyes.
And I really think that is really so true. In fact, everything at the present time points to the fact that we're moving towards a climax of history.
Amen.
Now, what are you learning about the Jewish culture and thought that would help the Gentile church?
Oh, my goodness. If you open up a beautiful word here, because I tell you, we've been sharing about God's feast, and we've been sharing about Jewish customs. A quick reference that most people do not know is when a man back in Jesus' time turned 30, he would take his son to the gate, which is the place of authority and where the elders would meet, and he would declare to the elders, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. And that meant that the son had become of age and could represent his father in business and things of this nature. Now, when Jesus was baptized around 30 years of age, in the River Jordan by John the Baptist, there was a heavenly voice that spoke, and some said it was thunder. But others said, no, it was a voice, and they said, this is my beloved son, in whom I'm well pleased. So the more we get into the culture of Judaism and understand the time where Jesus walked, then we have a better understanding of our heritage that we when we see the Messiah and what the scriptures speak to. The Feast of the Lord is another example. We study the feast, that God's feast, not the Jews' feast. It's not the Jews' feast. It's God's feast that he declared. And what we call Pentecost is Sabaoth, and 50. And many things happen on Sabaoth. And so we celebrate this particular feast in the Feast of Tabernacles and the Pesach. And so as we study the culture of and the Hebrew roots of it, we find that when we share this with people, they become more alive and understanding of the Scripture. Another thing that the Jews did, the rabbis of Jesus' time, was the rabbi would call his Talmudim, or his students, and he would say, I want you to be my student. They knew the Torah, which is the first five books of the Bible, but the rabbi would only take the smartest ones out for himself. But when Jesus, who was a rabbi, selected his disciples, his Talmudim, he took the rejects, the fishermen, the people that didn't make the grade to be a rabbi. And so this was really significant, because Jesus later on said, I think John 15, you did not choose me, but I chose you, which is, again, a Jewish cultural thing. And so with those scriptures in mind and those experiences, we learned, like, on the last great day of the feast. Well, what great day of the feast? He was speaking of Hanukkah, when Jesus stood up and said, I am the light of the world. Okay? And that's another indication, because when you read it in the Gentile way, or what we call the Roman Greek model, we didn't understand it. What's the last great day of the feast? What does that mean? And we just kind of blew over it. But with this heritage or understanding of Hebrew, we found out that the last great day of the feast was the Hanukkah, now the Feast of the Light, and Jesus stood up and said, I am the light.
In regard to the feasts, we have to remember that they were never canceled. And the early church, which was made up of Jewish believers, celebrated all the feasts of the Lord. And since they were instituted by God as rehearsals for the fulfillment of all his promises in Yeshua, when we learn to celebrate those feasts as Christian believers, we're actually acting out prophecy. Passover, unleavened bread, was fulfilled in the crucifixion with redemption, sanctification, justification. First fruits was fulfilled in the resurrection. Shavuot, which Bob was talking about, which is Pentecost or the Feast of Weeks, celebrates the coming of the Holy Spirit, the birth of the church. And then the fall feasts of Rosh Hashanah, which is the Feast of Trumpets, and Yom Kippur and Sukkot, which is the Feast of Tabernacles, will be fulfilled when Jesus comes again. So as believers, we need to understand what God set up to show us what was coming and how much of it has already been fulfilled. It's very exciting.
It really is. Of course, if you know the scriptures and you actually get over there, and then, of course, you see what's happening politically, because, of course, certainly there's tremendous political activity in the Middle East, and so much of it centers in this little country of Israel, and certainly there in Jerusalem, which of course is the center of worship of certainly the Muslims and the Protestants and the Jews.
Yes.
Holy to all three major religions in the world today.
Yes.
You often hear Jerusalem referred to as the navel of the world.
That's how the Orthodox Jews see it, the navel, the belly button of the world.
And, of course, one of the big problems today is that some of the Israeli leaders over there, Olmert and the others, are quite willing to sacrifice this as part of a political agenda. And, of course, they're giving up more and more land. They're talking about giving
terrible.
Samaria and Judea to the Palestinians. They've already given Gaza. They gave Gaza to the Palestinians, and they then use that as a base for launching missiles into southern Israel. And now, of course, the Israelis are talking about going in and attacking Gaza that they turned over to the Muslims here, 2 years ago. It doesn't make sense. Why would you have evacuated Gaza, given it to the Muslims? Didn't you know it was going to be used as a base for missile attacks? And I think they did, and the same thing will happen with Judea and Samaria. And step by step, of course, the land of Israel, the holy land of God, is being betrayed by the leaders of Israel. And, of course, I like to use the analogy, the same thing is being happened by our leaders, who seem to have a different agenda than that which is embraced by the average American. And I think, as we see, most Americans don't want to be involved in wars throughout the world, but We are doing that. Most Israelis don't want to give up Judea and Samaria, and they didn't want to give up Gaza, but they did. And so things happen, and it's so hard to understand unless one understands the powerful spiritual forces that are at work behind the scenes. And until you recognize that, really very little makes sense.
Well, I'll speak to that about the Orthodox rabbis. They said that Olmert was spiritually bankrupt. And it's not my word, it's the Orthodox rabbis who are Israelis. Olmert is willing to, what they called, share Jerusalem or divide Jerusalem. And of course, there's a counter move to that. No one wants to see Jerusalem divided or shared. It belongs to God's people, and that's their capital. So we're on board for supporting Israel, what they call One Jerusalem. And I would love to see one of our presidents finally fulfill what the Congress had passed and move our embassy there and establish it in Jerusalem as opposed to Tel Aviv.
But, of course, our president isn't doing that. Our president is using the prestige of America to bring about the Palestinian state, and they pressured Israel into giving up Gaza. They're pressuring Israel to give up Judea and Samaria.
Yes, they are.
So why would a Christian president be doing everything he can to undermine, of course, the land of Israel?
Well, let's put it this way.
Hold it right there. We'll be back in just a moment.
Sure.
Okay, Bob, go right ahead.
No, I was going to say I would hate to be in President Bush's shoes before God when God tells him, why did you do this? I do know that when they are stripping down Israel, removing the land, which is their basis for security, of course. And we stood on what they call Senator's Hill. And Senator's Hill is what they bring our congressmen to the Israelis so they can see how narrow the land is that they're asking to give over to the Palestinians, the mountains of Israel, so to speak, which God has already given to the Israelis. But they're removing them, and it's such a narrow strip that any military on a high place can literally rain down rockets and mortars and on defenseless civilians, which they are prone to do. They don't care who they are as long as they're killing Jewish people or even their own, because there are others that live in the same area. They're out to destroy and kill, to drive Israel into the sea. So this negotiation, what they call the roadmap, is the furthest thing from any reasonable man, but yet they're pushing this roadmap, and the quartet, which represents Europe and Russia and the United States with Tony Blair, they're pushing Israel to give up its land and Jerusalem for the sake of having a, quote, a Palestinian state, when we know from our study of history, Jordan is actually the Palestinian state. And yet when the Palestinians moved there, they caused disruption and tried to bring down the king of Jordan. And when they moved to Lebanon, they caused a disruption there. What once was a beautiful country, Lebanon, where Christian Jews and Muslims got along, the fact of having Palestinians, and they still have a problem, disrupted the economy and the governance. And now there's mayhem there, and the Hezbollah is entrenched there and also raining down rockets towards from Lebanon to Israel. So they have a offensive movement there from the Gaza to the south, from the north to the, into the central Israel. So it's a predicament that none of us in the United States would like to have our neighbors shooting rockets at us, because it would kill anyone. And that's what we're asking the Israelis to do, our government is, I should say, but not the people. So that's, we take a strong stance against the evacuation of Gush Katif, which was in the Gaza. They removed beautiful Orthodox people that established 40, 50 years in the land, grew fruit that they exported to Europe, and they turned over all these houses and they were destroyed, or these greenhouses that had all this fruit in it. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Well, you see, as you look and see at what's going on over in Israel, it really doesn't make any logical sense. So
no.
My feeling is there has to be another explanation, just as the similarity between what's going on in America, so much of what's going on here doesn't make sense if you look at it logically. And our plea then is, if something happens and it isn't logical, then look for the real explanation, which very, very few people are aware of. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment with Bob and Ann. We're taking a trip over there to Israel on the 17th of February, my birthday, and of course, it should be an exciting time, and hopefully it'll be a safe time for you. It seems that a lot of the danger of war seems to have been aborted for the time being, so we'll hope and pray for a safe trip. We'll be right back here.
Good.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Bob and Ann Schultz. And if you're out in the listening audience and you have a question for Bob and Ann, we'll be leading a trip to Israel here starting the 17th of February. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And I will tell you that having been in Israel on six occasions and, you know, in Jerusalem on six different occasions, you know, I really long to go back again and walk through the Damascus Gate or the Sheep Gate or the various gates that they have there into the city. And each part of the city is so different. And all the wonderful places, the Sea of Galilee and certainly the Golan Heights and, you know, Gideon Spring, and so many things that, make the Bible come alive as you actually travel in those areas. And certainly the Mount Hermon you can see in the distance, and certainly the various mountains that Jesus ascended, and the Mount of Transfiguration, and even the area where Saul met the sorceress. Why all of these things are there. So you really have a feeling of being one with history, one with the land.
Amen.
Now, when you go to pray for the Jewish people, what about the Arab people? Certainly the Arabs living in Israel have a difficult time.
Yes.
We love to pray for the Arabic people. It's interesting that two times in the last 3 years that we've been in Jerusalem, we have gone to Sukkot Hillel, which is a 24/7 prayer and worship center run by Rick and Patty Riding. At the exact hour when they were scheduled to pray for the Arab people, and we didn't plan it that way, but we walked in, and that's what was going on in that prayer watch. And both times, we have very special times of prayer for the Arab people. There's a real crying out for these people. They are so many of them are deceived, and there's this. The spirit of Islam is so full of death, and we were praying and asking God, why are these people so susceptible to this horrible spirit of Islam? What is it that's caused these people, these beautiful, hospitable, wonderful people, to succumb to this evil that is behind the spirit of Islam? And as we were praying, the Lord began to give me a song, a prophetic song, and I began to sing in my prayer, and it was the prayer of a mother praying for her abandoned child and calling out to the child to come back. And the Lord showed us that there is a terrible spirit of abandonment that began with Ishmael and has gone on and on and gotten worse and worse. And they are longing for to be loved and to be part of what God is doing, and they have they've accepted a counterfeit, and there's a terrible thing that's been going on in Israel. We see it with the bombings, the terrorists, and there is such a spirit of death that comes out of that. The anger of being abandoned is at the root of that, and so that's what we prayed into that day. We really need to. Reach out to the Arab peoples. One of the things that Cheryl does so effectively is to reach out into the Palestinian population and reach them and love them and show them, not just say that we love them, but to show that we love them. Life is very difficult for them. There is tremendous poverty. Of course, the Palestinian Authority takes all the money that we give them, all these millions and billions of dollars in aid don't go to the people. They go to the pockets of the people who are running things, and so there's terrible poverty. The families are split. They can't be together. They don't have food. They don't have clothing. It's just a terrible thing. And what Cheryl is doing is amazing. She goes in and she reaches them. bringing things that they need and bringing the love of God to them, the true God to them, and introducing them to a God who is full of love. And she's done amazing work over there in the last 7 years.
And, of course, Anne is referring to Cheryl Hancock, who is a frequent guest here. In fact, when Cheryl was here about 2 weeks ago, she came and spent a part of the day with us, a wonderful time. We really enjoyed having lunch and fellowshipping with Cheryl Hancock. Cheryl's back over in Israel, and of course, Bob and Anne and their people will be going to visit Cheryl and seeing what she's doing. And there are Christian missionaries over there. Of course, they can't be openly Christian missionaries because, of course, that's not allowed. But Cheryl, of course, does the work of a missionary, even though she is ostensibly there with a medium. The problem that we have is there's tremendous antagonism, you know, on the part of certainly of the conservative Jewish people against Christianity. And if, say, a Jewish person is to convert to Christianity, they'll go to their employer and get them fired. And there's a tremendous fear of Christianity, both in the Muslim and in the Jewish faith. Well, we'll be back here in just a moment, here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Bob and Ann Schultz, and we're talking about, of course, their coming trip to Israel. We're talking about the plight of Israel. We're talking about the plight of the people live there, the Muslim Palestinians, the Christian Palestinians, the Jewish people, the Jewish converts to Christianity. Certainly, your Hasidic Jews, your Orthodox Jews, your liberal Jews, your atheistic Jews. It's a very strange land in many respects, and yet it's a wonderful land. It's the land that God has brought the Jewish people back to, and many of them not in faith at all. But of course, I believe that things are going to change, and I believe there are going to be terrible, terrible things happening to Israel. And it's only when bad things happen that people begin looking for God. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you'd like to give us a call, if you have a question or comment for our guests this evening, Bob and Ann Schultz, as we talk about their coming trip to Israel. And what is different about your prayer journey from a regular tour? In other words, lots of people go over and lead tours to the Holy Land. Why is what you do different?
That's a good question, and it's a great one, because a lot of tourists go over there just for 10 days. And it's a whirlwind tour. They try to take you every place that they want to show you. Our tours are definitely different insofar as we get 14 days, and we give the individuals 2 days off to walk in Jerusalem, go into the Jewish, Christian quarter, Arab quarter from our hotel, and we send them out by two so they can experience this land without having a guide or someone overseeing them. Many come back with favorable reports, the excitement of being in that precious land without being pushed to go this site or that site. The second thing we do, and not to avoid and not be criticized, but we don't go to many churches. A lot of churches, you know, the sacred sites that people believe in, they built a church over it. And so the Jewish people feel that that when tourists come, they want to see these churches. Well, honestly, there's probably one church we dearly love is St. Anne's. And I'll let Anne, who is my wife's name, explain what St. Anne's is all about, which is one of the best churches we've ever been in.
St. Anne's is actually in East Jerusalem, and so you have to be very careful when you go in there. But that is where...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob and Ann Schultz, leading a trip over there to Israel. And give us a call if you're out in the listening audience. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And of course, we're talking about Israel, We're talking about the coming trip, and we were simply talking about the St. Anne's Church. Now, that's in Eastern Jerusalem.
Yes,
Eastern airport. Jerusalem is the airport, and I've been there by myself. You don't necessarily want to walk in the airport by yourself. because there's tremendous hostility towards Americans, because we are the things that they know America supports Israel, and there is this intense hatred of the Israelis on the part of so many of the Palestinians, and of course it's mutual. The Jews hate the Palestinians, and I don't know how we're ever going to solve that unless they all become Christians. But what about St. Anne's Church there in East Jerusalem?
St. Anne's is built right next to the traditional pool of Bethesda. And, of course, there are layers and layers, as there are everywhere in Jerusalem. But the church itself is the last of the Crusader-built churches that is still intact and has absolutely perfect acoustics. And people go in there and sing, and the acoustics are just extraordinary. And because I'm a musician and a singer, that really appealed to me. When we went in there and sang, it was just such an amazing moment to just hear the sound ringing so perfectly through these beautiful Gothic arches. It was extraordinary. So this year, we're going to prepare a song before we go. So we have something specific to sing. One of the other things that we do that's different is we have relationship with some very interesting Orthodox Jewish people over there. You were talking earlier about how the Orthodox people just don't trust the Christians. And, you know, they have really good reason historically not to. And we love to repair some of that wherever we can. And the Lord has been very gracious to introduce us to some very interesting people. There's two young men, Ari and Jeremy, who are on Israel National Radio. They have a daily show called Light to the Nations. And they are young, very, very visionary Orthodox Jews and very Orthodox. But their rabbi has given them permission to educate Christian believers about Jewish things. And so they're allowed to, they're actually given dispensation to meet with Gentile believers and to talk to them and build relationship with them. And so when we were there last year, Ari came and visited us at our hotel. We were at the Mount Zion Hotel, and he came and visited us one evening. And we got to know each other, and we talked, and we shared, and we built relationships. And he's just a fascinating young man. He doesn't want to convert to Christianity, but he really wants to be in relationship with us. And that is very unusual for Orthodox Jewry. Something's changing. Something's shifting. Not everywhere, but we're seeing pockets of it. When we go into Judea and Samaria, and we go up to Har Bracha on Mount Gerizim, we meet with Nir, who is another Orthodox Jew, lovely young man with a family, who tends the vineyards and the olive groves on the top of the Mount of Blessing, which in the Old Testament, when the Jews came into the land and they got up on the mountain and they read all the blessings off of one mountain and the curses off of the other, well, he lives up here on the one where they read all the blessings. And he is creating wine and olive oil from the vineyards and the groves up on the top of the Mount of Blessing. And he is very excited because he feels the Messiah is coming soon. And so we go up and he cooks us lunch. And we were sitting there last year having lunch with him in his home with his family. He cooked the lunch for us. And we were sitting there and we were just rejoicing and worshiping and praising God together. And he looked at me and he said, "I feel the Messiah. He's so very close. I must open a bottle of wine and celebrate." You know, it was just an amazing thing. And this is a man we have built relationship with over a period of 2 or 3 years. And it's happening like this more and more. It's very exciting.
What are your thoughts on that, Bob?
Well, I tell you, since I'm privileged to have a glass of wine up there with Nir, it was wonderful. He's a great man of God, and again, it's just a relationship things that we've been developing over these past 3-4 years, and we see more and more of this happening, especially with the Palestinian believers. We have a man who accepted the Messiah, and he was, of course, put on the hit list by the Islamic folks, and so he's separated from his family right now. We don't disclose names or identities because there is a contract out, perhaps. They know that we know him. And so we try to keep his identity a secret, but the man is crying out to be with his family again and get his family to safety. So these are real-life situations. Again, we don't experience things like here, but over there, that's what happens.
And I think that people here in the United States don't understand the plight of the Palestinians, especially the plight of the Palestinian Christians, but
yes.
Or the plight of anybody who were to convert to Christianity within the Palestinian community, or anybody who was to convert to Christianity in the Jewish community.
Yes.
I mean, here in the United States, you want to become a Christian, that's fine. Nobody's going to be concerned over
right.
there. Why, of course, they will kill you if you convert to Christianity and you're a Muslim. And, of course, if you are a Jewish, they'll do everything they can to make sure you can't have a job or that your reputation is ruined, and they'll try to disrupt it. Certainly, people who are trying to evangelize over there and bring people into a personal relationship with the Lord. So we live here in America in really a utopian society.
Yes,
but I think the reality of what's going on in the world you're going to see over in Israel.
One of the things that we're dealing with is a family we just adopted. By adoption, we mean they're Messianic Jews. This brother, Tov, he is an American, Canadian rather, that went to Israel, and he's a Messianic believer. He believes in his Messiah, Yeshua, Jesus. And when some Orthodox Jews found out about it, they pushed and pushed to get him fired from his teaching job. So they got him removed, and so now he's destitute in one way, and they want that to happen so that they would pack their bags and return to the land, in this case, Canada. And so when they have Messianic Jews, those who believe in the Messiah, they're lovely people, wonderful people, but the Orthodox Jews tried to get rid of them by removing them, not physically, but having them lose their jobs, source of income. And so the families have to abandon Israel and return to their respective nations. So that's real, too. So for them who accepted the Messiah. Now, the other thing is the Ethiopian Jews, what we know as Falasha. The Falasha Jews, there's numbers of them in Ethiopia that cannot come to Israel. Why they've been accepted by the rabbis as being from the tribe of Dan, their mistake is that they believe in the Messiah. So once the Orthodox Jews, or the NRP, the National Religious Party, found out, well, wait a second, these are no longer Jews because they are Christians, and they make sure that they delineate that. But we know different. They are Messianic Jews. In other words, they're Jewish people. They received their Messiah. But they can't come to Israel, and they're stuck there in Israel, in Ethiopia, and they're kind of in the no man's land. Now, with that, is that the Ethiopian government doesn't want them. The Israeli doesn't want them, so they're in the primitive land, in the primitive condition, and they can't get out, although they do have Israeli passports, so to speak, but they can't fly into Israel. So we're involved with the Ethiopian Jewish people as well, like Sudanese. The Sudanese and the Ethiopians are trying to get into Israel. Some have successfully got in. Others trying to get over the fence were shot by the Egyptians. So they couldn't get through Egypt into Israel. So the Israeli soldiers, as we know, the IDF, is trying to help these Ethiopians and Sudanese get into Israel. But they had to come across that no man's land, and some of them lost their lives. So it's a real, great situation here. It's not just the Palestinians or the Jewish people or the Christians in the land. It's also those in those native lands, such as Ethiopia, or Sudan, who wants to get into Israel to be safe and be secure, and they are believers in the Messiah. They can't do that.
Well, I think that here we live in America in really a utopian world.
Yes.
And people don't understand, that in many parts of the world, you risk your life being a Christian. Certainly you do in communist China, and of course they're not very favorable towards, Christianity in Russia, although it's probably tolerated in many respects more in the schools there than it is here in the United States. But of course, certainly we see the tragedy in Africa and in parts of Africa. I said, in the Muslim parts of Africa, if you're a Christian, why, you'll be targeted, and there in Israel, the situation exists, and in Muslim countries, in Saudi Arabia, you're not allowed to, well, if you were to convert to Christianity, they would just simply kill you.
Yes.
You can't have a Bible, you can't have a cross. I mean, and this is the country that is supported by the United States.
Yes.
Although we're so interested in, you know, in democracy, but they can have all sorts of tyranny in Saudi Arabia, and we never say anything at all about that.
No.
And talk about, I mean, our leaders give hypocrisy a bad name. They really do.
Well, yes, and, you know, the honor killings, which many women die because of their Muslim code. No one ever addresses the honor killings. You know, when a woman, unfortunately, is raped, they don't kill the man. They kill the woman. And they're disgraced, you know. And you can see that just recently, and I think in Florida or some state where the Muslim man killed his two daughters in the back of his taxi cab because these two Islamic girls were dating Americans. And so he took it upon himself to kill them. But that's the Sharia law that is going on. In Sharia law, they tried to bring to the United States or to Australia or other countries where there's large populations of Muslims. They want to bring everyone under Sharia law. And consequently, that honor killings and that code is the code of blood and vengeance and death.
Well, I think, of course, there are a lot of Muslims who came to America to get away from that, and really they want to live under our laws. Certainly there are some who want to bring Sharia law there. Of course, they were talking about that over in Australia, and the Prime Minister said, look, if you want Sharia law, why don't you go back where you came from and get out of this country? You know, you either live by our laws or get out. And all I can say is I was certainly proud of that guy.
Me too. But he's no longer the Prime Minister.
I know, yeah. That's too bad. But anyway, are you actively evangelizing the Jews on your trip?
Not in the way that Christians usually think of evangelism. The old models of evangelism generally don't work too well, especially in the land. God's desire in Romans 9:2 says that all Israel will be saved. God wants to have all Israel saved. And we know that Yeshua promised that he wouldn't return until the Jews say, Baruch haba b'shem Adonai, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, which it says in Matthew 23:39. But we're coming now into the times of Zechariah 12, and if we have developed relationship with the Jewish people, then as the scales begin to come off their eyes, which we're beginning to see, then we will have earned the right to speak into their lives. Because of all of the horrible things that have been done in the name of Christianity historically to the Jewish people, you really just can't, you know, evangelize them the same way, because they have a real fear of Christians at a very visceral level. I mean, Hitler supposedly was a Christian, and everything he did supposedly came from Christians as far as the Jews are concerned. And that's what they really believe, and it's been historically down through the ages. Since Constantine, the Jews have been persecuted by the Christians. And so it's very difficult to use traditional evangelism methods because of that. But when we earn the right to speak into their lives by coming towards them and studying their culture, studying the Old Testament, and understanding Jewish thought, and understanding that they're the root that holds us up. We're grafted into their tree. And when we begin to speak into that and love them by showing them how we love them, that's one of the reasons we go into the land is, you know, you can tell somebody you love them, but you need to show the Jewish people that you love them. And by going to Israel, that's part of showing them that we care about them and that we love them. So it's all about relationships. They don't have a separate covenant. There's one covenant where they're going to come to the renewed covenant that God has for them. And many of them, as we know, already are doing that. But I really believe that the key to evangelizing the Jewish people is to understand Judaism and to go towards them and be in relationship with them, so that then we earn the right to speak into their spiritual lives. And many of them are hungry for Messiah. Once they get past the fear of Christians.
And I think, really think that one day, by God, is going to act in all of their lives. He will draw the people who are supposed to come to him, to them.
Exactly.
We had two secular Jews that we went to visit, and he took great pains to show us a road that they built for the Pope of Rome to come. And we said, well, that's nice. And then he said, well, he looked at us, and we were not impressed. And then he said, well, isn't the Pope of Rome your leader? And I said, oh, no. I said, no, that's just the Roman Catholic community. And, well, he said, isn't Christianity all under the Pope? And so even the Jewish secular people have a misperception or conception of, you know, the Pope and et cetera, they put us all under the Pope of Rome. And so we you know, corrected that, and he understood then. But it's just fascinating, the concept that people have about the United States, about Christians, of course. So part of the attempts when we do go over there is to sit, and we do sit with them, and explain different things, including the Islamic folks. I was invited, Ann and I were invited into a birthday party in a Palestinian apartment, and a Muslim man was there with his wife, and he asked me to pray over him so he may have a son. And so I did. But he received the prayers from a believer, from a Christian, and I checked with Cheryl later, and I said, well, did his wife have a baby? She said, yes. I said, what did he have? And she said, a son. So that was an answer to prayer. But the Islamic or the Muslims are open to having believers pray over them too.
Well, of course, the Muslims believe in Jesus, but it's a different Jesus. That's the thing. He was a prophet, but he was not, of course, this son of God or God himself, God incarnate. So, you know, at least you have something to share, and then you can build on that. Well, our guest this evening has been Bob and Ann Schultz, and they're going to be going over there on the 17th of February, and let's hope they have a good, safe trip, because, of course, this is an area of potential violence. Hopefully things are going to be quieted down for the time being as some of the negotiations are going on, and well, we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up this night's evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Bob and Ann, we have 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Who's okay. going to wrap it up, or do you want to both wrap it up?
Well, we'll probably go ahead, Ann.
Well, it's really hard to get a lot of information into such a short time, and it's been so good talking to you, Dr. Stan. Our excitement about Israel is something that is birthed in our hearts by God, and we believe that when people who are believers in Yeshua, Jesus, go to Israel, that God does something in their hearts. He does heart surgery when they go into the land. So often people say, well, you know, I've read the Bible, but I don't need to go see it. But then they get there, and they come back changed. They're different because they've walked the land, and they've understood God's love for the land. One of the things that is really important for us is we try to train our teams before we go, and part of the homework we do is to ask them to read a book by James Gall called Praying for Israel's Destiny. And this is the core of what we do when we go into the land. It's probably the best thing I've ever seen written about how to pray for Israel. And we highly recommend it. But when people have read this book and go with their hearts prepared to pray for the land, for the people in the land, to understand God and have God's heart for the land and the people as they go into the land, their prayers become powerful and effective.
Right. And we also recommend, as America has done to Israel, by John McTiernan. And he was a retired Treasury, special agent with the U.S. Treasury. And he's a historian. And he compares what happened to Gush Katif to Katrina. And he has many historical examples about when the United States spoke against and did policies against Israel. The United States always paid a price for it. And why our leaders decided it, it was the people that, in essence, suffered. So we recommend also reading As America Has Done to Israel book. It's really important that we get aware of politically and spiritually and things of what we call the Issachar generation. The tribe of Issachar was aware of the times that they were living in. And as you said, Dr. Stan, the Lord's coming back soon. And we have to be prepared, and we are preparing our hearts and preparing people as we go in the land of what's happening today. Russia wanted to get into Syria, into the Middle East, and they finally did. They got their troops into Lebanon. And so we see things like this unfolding, Gog, Magog, and the attempt to bring armies into the Middle East. One of the things that I didn't discuss with you, and I want to encourage people, is the Mount of Olives. That's my mountain. I love the Mountain of Olives.
I do, too. And we're out of time. Bob and Ann, thank you so very much for being with us. God bless you both.
Thanks, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope you've enjoyed our interview with Bob and Ann Schultz, and that you'll pray for their safety during the trip starting the 17th of February. Of course, they're going into the land, to the Holy Land. It really is Holy Land. It's one of the most amazing experiences of your life if you've never gone. And I would love someday to lead a tour over there. And I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but certainly it is an exciting experience. And I certainly read taking the trip down the Nile. If you've never taken the trip down the Nile, that is wonderful, wonderful. The Greek islands over there, of course, the island of Patmos, where John the Divine was and in his older years, and where he wrote the Revelation. So anyway, right now, of course, this is the time I need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is still primarily listener-supported. And if you are out there across America, and of course you are, you believe, as I do, that we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on the political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, that there really are demonic forces out there that are directing the lives of key people, whether it be in the music industry or entertainment or in politics or banking or education. And, of course, we will take you into who these people are and, of course, how they're working and tell you what the other side says. And we do have the opportunity to read what the other side says and to put that into our newsletters. And if you'd like to get our January newsletter, you'll certainly want to get that. And you'll find out that although a lot of what these people say is so ridiculous, you can't believe that they're serious. When you find the most wealthy people in the world financing them, why, you begin to realize, of course, that there's a great deal of, you have to put a great deal of credence in what they say. So anyway, that's our January newsletter. You can request it. It's not even finished yet, but it will be available shortly. But of course, if you'd like more information, we have a three pamphlet set based upon our newsletters. It's called the Occult Hierarchy. That's the Occult Hierarchy, and we suggest that you may want to read that. We do carry three books by Manly P. Hall. Now, they are only for research. We don't endorse them, but The Secret Teachings of All Ages, the book The Secret Destiny of America and The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, we carry all three of them because we want you to at least have the opportunity of reading what people who worship Satan have to say. And there really are millions of people in the world today who worship the other god, who is Satan. And understand that, and until you understand that, you can't understand the supernatural. There's so much of what's going on today, or what the idea is of reaching the beings from the other dimension. There really are people, of course, who don't understand the metaphysical, but it is there, it's real, it's not imaginary. Well, under any circumstances, we do hope you'll want to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll want to get our talk on the forbidden secret and the syllabus that goes with that, and then, of course, you'll want to get the videos on They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. Excellent DVDs and videos. And I promise you, after you've watched them, you will never look at the world through the same eyes again. You'll certainly want to get our 4-tape set on satanic crimes and the book on satanic crimes. You'll want to get our 4-tape or 4-CD set on the secret behind the secret. And then, of course, you'll want to get our new a four-tape set or four-CD set on the Bilderbergers and on Spy Chips, just to put them together recently. Very important. You need to understand the background of what's going on today, because we are moving into a period of chaos and crisis, and of course we ask you to pray for revival, because if we don't have a revival in America, the nation that we've known and love is going to be lost forever. Pray for our ministers and